Ekada.
Ekada.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Asit. Took a vow.
Mahasatra.
Mahasatra.
Great sacrifice.
Diksha.
Diksha.
Initiation.
Initiation.
Tatra.
Tatra.
In that function.
In that function.
Diva Okasam.
Diva
Okasam. Of the demigods.
Of the
demigods. Samajaha.
Samajaha.
Assembly.
Assembly.
Brahma Rishinam.
Brahma Rishinam.
Of great saintly Brahmanas.
Of great saintly
Brahmanas.
Cha.
Also.
Raja
Rishinam.
Of great saintly
kings.
Cha.
Also.
Sattama.
The greatest of devotees. Translation. Once upon a time, King Prithu initiated the performance of a very great sacrifice in which great saintly sages, brahmanas, demigods from higher planetary systems, and great saintly kings known as Rajarshis all assembled together. Translation, please repeat. Once upon a time,
King Prithu
initiated the performance
of
a very great sacrifice
in which great saintly sages,
brahmanas, demigods from higher planetary systems, and great saintly kings, known as Rajarshis, all assembled together. Purport. In this verse, the most significant point is that although King Prithu's residential quarters were in India, between the rivers Ganges and Yamuna, the demigods also participated in the great sacrifice he performed. This indicates that formerly the demigods used to come to this planet. Similarly, great personalities like Arjuna, Yudhishthir, and many others used to visit higher planetary systems. Thus, there was interplanetary communication via suitable airplanes and space vehicles. Om Agyanati Manvasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshundata Nipandata Mianatasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, Maharaj Prithu is performing a great yajna, a sacrifice. So, one of the main duties of a king is to perform sacrifices. So, in the seventh verse of this chapter, Srila Prabhupada mentions the main duties of a king. So, in this context, there was monarchy. So, that, therefore, King Prithu is, Maharaj Prithu is addressed as a king. Today, we have democracy. So, a different paradigm or different system of governance, but nonetheless a leader is required. So King Prithu, he was performing this yajna. So a yajna is, there's three duties for a king, one of the three main important duties. Number one is to perform sacrifices. So that's the main job of the prime minister or president or the leadership of a country, is to not only perform but also engage people engage the citizenry in the performance of yajnas, because yajna is very important. It is important because we are not independent. People think that they are independent, and society is independent, they can do whatever they like to do. But or maybe people think that they are interdependent, but they still think there's no higher powers which govern the laws of the universe or the laws of nature. So, but the fact of the matter is, we are interdependent by nature, and the demigods are there to provide administration for the universal affairs. That's their job, and they have various titles depending on the position they hold. So there's Varuna, there's Surya, and like that there's 33 million demigods who are responsible for different functions of the universe. So, sacrifice is important because they need to be satisfied or pleased so they can reciprocate with us. Just like here I can see the majority are grihasthas or householders. So you get if we take services, right, we have to pay for it. For example, utilities. We get a water bill or electricity bill, right? Or internet bill. So when we consume services, then we have to pay for them. So in the same way, we are consuming various services which are being provided by the higher powers because they are in charge. So we have a price to pay for that. And Krishna says, one who doesn't pay the price is a thief. In the Gita, he says that. One who doesn't pay the price is a thief. And then a thief is liable to be punished. Right? So when somebody steals something, if they get caught, the consequences, they will be punished. So we have that system also. In the same way, when we take our fair share, but we don't reciprocate with the demigods in the form of sacrifices, performing yajnas, we get implicated. And we get implicated in the reactions, in those activities. But the whole idea of sacrifice is to please Vishnu. Yajna vai Vishnu. And Krishna says that. Yajna vai Vishnu. So the whole idea is to perform sacrifice for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th verse of the 3rd chapter, does anyone remember that? Yajna. Correct. Anyatra, loko, karma, vandana. And what's the third one? Mukta sangha samachara. So Krishna says there in the 9th verse, he says, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. So the most important point is work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. So that's the whole idea of yajna. The idea of yajna is to perform, is for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. So in India we see people perform so many different kinds of yajnas, right? Demigod worship is very prominent in India too, you know, according to the conceptions of people. Whatever concoctions and ideas they have, they perform demigod worship to some extent. And usually it's not perfect. So, and the reason people perform yajnas is so they can get various benefits. So, for example, if they're having family problems, they'll, you know, do their local priest or family priest will say, do this yajna. Or if they're having job problems, then maybe financial problems, do this yajna. So you can get a job or get a promotion. And if you want prosperity, so do this yajna. For health, do this yajna. So the family priest, people consult the family priest. So they get advice to perform a certain yajna. And then they can get material benefits. That's the idea. That's what people have in mind. But the main purpose is to satisfy Krishna. Yajna is meant for Krishna's satisfaction. And we see even the demigods, they worship Lord Krishna. So like a lot of people worship Lord Shiva, right? In India, Shiva worship is very big. But Lord Shiva, he himself worships Lord Krishna. And Lord Shiva is the one of the greatest devotees of Lord Krishna. So we see the demigods are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. And they themselves worship the Lord. Right? So we need to approach the source directly. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas in ISKCON, they have emphasized worship of of Swayam Bhagavan, of Shyam Sundar, right? So demigod worship is not encouraged because we understand that Lord Krishna is the source and all demigods are part and parcel of Him. And in Kali Yuga, the prime performance is the performance of Sankirtan, right? Is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sango Pangasra Parshadam. So Lord Chaitanya, He has appeared in the age of Kali. He has a golden hue and He is carrying out the performance of Sankirtan. So Sankirtan is the glorification, congregational glorification of the holy names of the Lord. So in Kali Yuga, this is the prime sacrifice, right? And Sankirtan takes various shapes and forms, right? So, but the main point is the in the different activities we are doing within Krishna consciousness, they have to be accompanied by the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. So even when deity worship is carried out, the chanting of the holy names are carried out as well in the background, right? In the foreground and the background. Various mantras are chanted for the glorification of the Lord. So, in the execution of various services, the names of the Lord have to be carried out. And of course, the prime activity is also directly chanting the holy names of the Lord. So we see Srila Prabhupada, he introduced street chanting, Harinam Sankirtan, and then also Japa. And this is Mahaprabhu's program, right? So Mahaprabhu's program is to perform this yajna, this sacrifice. And this is the main sacrifice. So yes, number one duty of a king, as mentioned earlier also, is to get people to perform sacrifice. So back in the days of Maharaj Prithu, the kings, they encouraged people in performing different yajnas. So in that context, people were much more pious and they were worshipping demigods. So that was encouraged, but the whole idea behind that was that even when there is yajnas for demigods, there is an element of worship of the Supreme Lord. Because in all the mantras like Om is chanted, and all the mantras, they begin and end with Om. So there is glorification of the Supreme Lord. So in today's day and age, that yajna is not possible. Different types of yajna, those demigod yajnas are certainly not possible. And even in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada didn't stress on the performance of yajnas. So, and even when Srila Prabhupada, inaugurated the Krishna Balaram temple, he could have inaugurated the temple just by chanting of having Kirtan, right, which is the highest yajna. But Srila Prabhupada said, okay, bring all the brahmanas, the expert brahmanas, and they were non-ISKCON. He said, bring them, get them to do the yajna, and let's inaugurate the temple. Because Srila Prabhupada knew that people in Vrindavan, in India, would not consider the inauguration to be authentic unless there was, grand performance of yajna. But the highest yajna is the chanting of the holy names. So just by doing kirtan, and that is sufficient in itself, right? So Srila Prabhupada, he always stressed that. So like yesterday, there was the 12-hour kirtan. So the 12-hour kirtan is the highest form of yajna. Just by doing that, if we have faith, we are getting the benefit of everything else, just by doing that activity. So by partaking in that. So number one, yajna. Then number two, the duty of a king. Is to engage everyone according to varna and ashram. So that's the second duty of a king, as Srila Prabhupada described in the 7th verse of this chapter. The second duty of a king is to engage people in according to the prescribed duties. Right? So we see even today, what is the main concern of the leadership of the government is to prevent unemployment, right? So they're engaging people, they want to engage people in occupational activities, right? That's the main concern, you know, is their jobs, is the creation of jobs, and that's how politicians are elected, right? That's the main focus. Of course, from the Vedic point of view, or from the Krishna conscious point of view, we understand that's not the main. The main is to make people Krishna conscious and then engage them according to their propensity. So, Srila Prabhupada also, he engaged devotees according to their propensity, right? According to their ashram and according to their varna or their propensity, he engaged them in different activities. And the expertise of a spiritual master is to engage devotees, engage his disciples according to their psychophysical nature. Everyone has different natures, so they have to be engaged accordingly. And if a temple president is to engage devotees according to their natures, so yes, there are needs of the temple, but also the idea is to engage them according to their propensities, and that way they'll be more satisfied and be willing to serve. And then the number three duty of a king is to make sure there's sufficient production of food grains. Right, so that's the number three duty of a king, is to make sure that there is food for people to eat. So, good, and not only food, but good quality food, right? Organic food, good quality grains and food has been grown. So today we are seeing that the majority of the population, they are engaged in industry. Right? So in Australia we have these service industries. So people are engaged in service industries, for example, finance, IT, health, education. These are service industries. People are engaged in these industries. Before, people were primarily engaged in manufacturing. Right? So in Australia, manufacturing is not so much there. In other countries, it's there. But very few people are engaged in agriculture, right? So, it is better if people are more engaged in agriculture, and if agriculture is decentralized. So currently, agriculture is centralized, and production of food grains is all centralized. And because it is centralized, it is very difficult to have good quality production of food grains. Because when you have to grow for masses, you have to produce for masses, it is very difficult to grow food in a organic way, right? You are forced to use chemicals and different pesticides because you have to produce on such a large scale. And then because it is all centralized, food has to be transported. And in order to transport food, it has to be maintained. In order to maintain it, you have to use different artificial ways to preserve the food. So the king in the days of yore, they would encourage food production to be decentralized. And Prabhupada says economic development is very simple. People need and maybe an acre of land, a small piece of land, and then they can have some animals and grow their own food. And even we see those who, even in cities, some people have grow their own food, right? There are some people grow their food. Some people are very creative. They even growing food on balconies, right? Or on the rooftops of buildings in the CBD, some people are growing their food and then they bring it to the restaurant to sell it, or, you know. So it is possible. And even some devotees are doing that. Some devotees grow their own food. They have a patch of land. You don't need a lot of land. All you need is good sun, 4 to 5 hours of sun, 4 to 6 hours of sun a day. And you need some water. So it is possible to grow food. We do not need a lot of space. So Prabhupada's formula for economic development is very simple. People need to have a piece of land and then a cow if they can. That's ideal. And then grow some food. To grow food is not hard. I've seen even devotees live around me. Some, they're growing their own food, which is very nice. And they have abundance of food. they sometimes bring it to the temple. So it is possible to grow food. So a king's job is to encourage people to grow food and to encourage agriculture. And so this is the basics. This is the fundamental. And when people are engaged in that way, that will solve a lot of problems. But the problem these days is land is so expensive. Unfortunately, we have to take a massive mortgage and then, you know, to work to pay it off. But in some countries, even today, like my wife was telling me in Botswana, the government, they give their people a piece of land for free. So they give them a piece of land and then they don't, for a very nominal price or for nothing, then so people can live very peacefully. So they are already halfway there. If people have a piece of land, it is paid off, they're halfway there. So economic development is very simple, and that's what Rajarshis, saintly kings, would do. So they would encourage the Vaishyas to till the land, people in general, and they would encourage them to do business in that way. So these are the three main duties of a king. And here we also see that Maharaj Prithu, he invited various personalities for the yajna. So as a king, he was doing a yajna. And in that yajna, he invited great personalities. So various, he was the king of the entire planet. So he invited people, different leaders from all over the world to come for this yajna. And he was living in India, somewhere between the Ganges and the Yamuna. So that gives us an idea where he was residing, where his kingdom was. So he invited everyone, not only invited personalities from the earthly planet, but he invited personalities from different planets. So this might sound very far-fetched in today's context, but interplanetary travel was possible and was taking place back then. So interplanetary travel was there and demigods came. We see when Maharaj Yudhishthir, he performed the Rajasuya Yajna, different demigods, he invited all the demigods from all over the universe. Right? So Maharaj Yudhishthir, he wanted to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. Right? So he asked Shri Krishna, he asked Krishna, I would like to perform the Rajasuya Yajna to invite all the demigods so I can glorify you. I can ensure that they know your glories. Your glories are sufficiently heard. Everyone understands that you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if the demigods understand and all the kings, they are reminded or they understand, then naturally they will tell others, right? Because, and others will follow. So whatever a great man does, the people follow that. So the Maharaj Yudhishthira's idea was to, he was essentially preaching. That's what he was doing. He was doing on his level. So he's a king and he has great resources and he was doing it on a very grand scale. So Maharaj Yudhishthira wanted to glorify Krishna on a very grand scale. So he wanted to perform the king of all sacrifices, which is the Rajasuya Yajna. So then Krishna said, sure, sounds like a good idea. Send your brothers in all four directions to conquer all the kings of this world. So he said, before you do the Rajasuya Yajna, you need to have governance over all the kings of this world. You need to control them. You need to conquer them. So then Maharaj Yudhishthir, he sent his brothers in the four directions. And the way they conquered all the kings was not by declaring war on each kingdom. So they sent a horse, and they went there, they asked for taxes. So a very simple way. They went to these various kingdoms and they said, Maharaj Yudhishthir is doing a Rajasuya Yajna. He will be very shortly doing a Rajasuya Yajna. We would like you to pay your fair share of tax for that. So if you pay tax, what does that mean? You're working. You're subservient, right? So if I, you know, like the government is collecting taxes from all of us, what does that mean? That means that we are subservient to the government, right? Whether you like it or not. So that means you're under the control of the government. The Australian Taxation Office, which is the arm of the federal government, is taking taxes from everyone. So in the same way, Yudhishthir Maharaj, he sent his brothers, and you know, they had a system going on. They went and they collected taxes. So they said, there's a yajna going to happen, please give tax. And if a king said no, then a war was declared. So that was the system. A war was declared when a king said no. And then, so in this way they, all the kings gave their due share except for Jarasandha. So Jarasandha, he said, I'm not going to pay the tax. And then Jarasandha decided not to pay, and then Krishna, along with Bhima and Arjuna, they came up with a plan to destroy Jarasandha. So Jarasandha, and to cut a long story short, Jarasandha was killed, and then the path was set for the performance of the Rajasuya Yajna. So when the Rajasuya Yajna was set to be performed, Maharaj Yudhishthir, he sent invitations to, you know, personalities all over the universe. So we can see the interplanetary travel was possible with demigods. The invitations were sent to demigods. Lord Brahma came, Lord Shiva, Indra, the Charanas, the Vidyadharas, all the demigods, they appeared because interplanetary travel was possible. And they felt invited, they felt welcome, and there was a right environment for them to be there. So if we want somebody to come to our house, then they need to feel welcome, right, and invited. So because the demigods were invited and Shri Krishna was there, all the demigods came. And Sahadev, then it was decided to, the next item in the Rajasuya Yajna was to perform the Agra Puja, or to nominate the most worshipful personality. So Sahadev, he nominated Krishna, right? Sahadev glorified Krishna. He offered great prayers, and everyone unanimously agreed. Well, not unanimously, but Shishupal did not agree to that. So everyone else was agreed to that proposal except for Shishupal. So we know the past time Shishupal objected. He heard various insults and then his head was chopped off. So, but the point is, demigods came for the yajna, and interplanetary travel was occurring. One time I went to a retreat in New Zealand, and there Devamrita Swami, he showed a documentary where the point he was making was similar to this, that interplanetary travel is possible, and that the US military is aware of aliens coming to this planet, you know, right? There's UFOs who have been here, but that knowledge is not disclosed, because that will challenge a lot of paradigms, and they don't want people to know this. So we can see that yes, interplanetary travel is even occurring now, and what to speak of back in the day. So we see various pastimes. Even when Lord Krishna, he appeared when Lord Krishna appeared in the prison cell of Kamsa, and when Kamsa saw Devaki, he could see that Devaki is very effulgent, right? And when Krishna appeared, various demigods appeared, and they offered various prayers, right? There's the prayers offered by the demigods. So Lord Shiva came, Lord Brahma, they all offered various prayers in glorifying Krishna. So these are some examples. And even Arjuna was able to retrieve the sons of the Brahmanas. So in Dwarka there was this Brahmana who's, when his wife would give birth, the child would just disappear. So Arjuna, he said, okay, I will protect your sons. And he tried to protect, but still they vanished. And then Arjuna, along with Krishna, he went on interplanetary travel. So we can say interplanetary travel was very common, was not something which was, outside the norm back then. It was the norm. It was like everyday affair. So in the same way, but if the right environment is there, then demigods appear. So why demigods don't appear today? Because the right environment is not there. And also we need the eyes to see that. Srila Prabhupada, he would say, when he would be doing kirtan, he would say, everyone is here. I can see everyone. I can see Narad Muni. I can see, demigods. They all are here. So one also needs the eyes to see. So Srila Prabhupada, he had the vision to see that. And he would say, they all are present here. And Srila Prabhupada, he also created the right environment if you want to bring this on our level, one reason why today we don't get a lot of people coming to the temple or in the Western world, not so many non-Indians are coming to Krishna consciousness. So yes, we can see that because the right environment is not there, so therefore they're not coming. So we need to create the right environment where they will feel welcome to come. So we just can't say that they're not coming, we are doing everything, but they're not coming. So maybe we are doing something which is not right. We need to look at our own presentation and see if we can improve in some way so others can come. They can feel welcome to come to our centers, and we create an environment where they feel like participating. Right? So Srila Prabhupada, he created such environments. When he came to the US, first of all, he studied the scene. Prabhupada, he studied the scene. And even in this film, which was produced by Yadubar Prabhu, what's the name? Hare Krishna, the movement, the mantra, and the Swami who started it all. There we can see, Srila Prabhupada came, he studied the scene, and he created centers where people can come. And he encouraged his disciples, who understood the scene because they were Americans, so they understood, and he let them do things. He let them create centers, and they did various innovative things. Like in San Francisco, they had this rock dance, right? So this was quite cutting edge. There were different stars were invited, or different at the time, whoever the big shots were, they were invited. And then Srila Prabhupada came, and then they were chanted the Hare Krishna mantra, right? So they were able to deliver Krishna consciousness the way people could digest it. So that's the point. So they created an environment where people could connect. So just to summarize today's presentation, Maharaj Prithu here is performing yagyas in, 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 in these yajñas, he has invited various personalities. So we spoke about how the duty of a king is to perform sacrifices, and then we spoke how in Kali Yuga the prime sacrifice is the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra accompanies all other activities we do in Krishna consciousness. And how the duty of a king is to engage in Varnashram, and also how to promote agriculture. These, and then we spoke about agriculture, and then we spoke about interplanetary travel, how the demigods were invited to these yajñas, and how interplanetary travel was possible, gave various examples, and then how we can connect to people, how we should make ISKCON more accessible to people so they feel welcome. So I'll leave it there. Do you have any questions or comments on today's subject matter? Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, you mentioned how Krishna encouraged Pandavas to conquer the kingdoms.
Yeah.
So Prabhu, one of the criticisms of Islam is that Muhammad was considered to be a warlord, whereas we see here Krishna is encouraging Pandavas to actually conquer, go for a war. So how do we explain it to non devotees that how it is different what Krishna was saying or what the others said?
Okay, so you're saying today this Krishna would be considered a warlord or Maharaj Yudhishthira?
Like, just if I take that statement
literally. Sure, sure. So, well, the whole idea of the Rajasuya Yajna, Maharaj Yudhishthira's, the whole purpose was the glorification of Krishna. That was the whole intent. The intent was to get all the demigods, all the kings together, and to glorify Krishna. Right? That's the prime duty of a king or of the government, is to glorify Krishna, and for that resources are required. So and Maharaj Yudhishthira sent his brothers to collect resources, because resources were required for this Rajasuya Yajna. It was a very big yajna, and massive resources were required, so they had to pay tax for it, right? So and that kind of and there's nothing wrong in that. So yajna needs to be performed, and Maharaj Yudhishthira didn't want to conquer them, as I was mentioning. He didn't want to declare war. That wasn't his agenda. His agenda was to get resources to perform the yajna. But if someone didn't agree to that, then war was declared, right? So that is very different to what is happening today. So today also wars are fought to get resources, but it is getting resources for sense gratification. You know, before it was very different. Maharaj Yudhishthira wanted resources for glorification of Krishna, for that performance of the yajna. So that kind of conquest is very different to the wars which are fought today. Right? So the wars fought today is basically, number one is for the propagation of the armaments industry. Right? It's a big business. War is a big business. And when wars are fought, weapons are sold. There's a business. And then and it is all for the ego of the rulers. Right? That's another reason wars are fought. So they can show that they are so powerful and they can control people and make them subservient to themselves. And mainly wars are fought to get oil, water, and the wars of the future will be for water, right? And it is the current wars are not fought so people are made Krishna conscious. So the wars are not fought to defeat another country just because they're not executing Krishna consciousness, right? So Maharaj Yudhishthira is Dharmaraj, right? So the king is called Rajarshi, Raja Rishi, so a saintly king. So, and they would declare war to if another king was not Krishna conscious. And we see, like, if we take Mahabharata, Duryodhan was not Krishna conscious, whereas Yudhishthir is Krishna conscious. So Krishna, he wanted Yudhishthir to be the king, because the executive head needs to be Krishna conscious. Otherwise, even if they're a good ruler, they cannot execute the prime duty, which is propagation of Krishna consciousness. They need to engage the brahmanas for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. So that's the difference. So we can tell people that, just to sum it up, their intent was propagation of Krishna consciousness, whereas today that's not the intent. The intent is the profiteering of a few people. Any other question or comment? Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned that the great is the last day, so that people feel welcome to come here. I think the main aspect of that environment is that the people come with shoes and sit on the chairs or in the pews. But almost all churches, where people go, there are pews and people go in the shoes.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a major difference.
Something like this also occurred in Los Angeles when Srila Prabhupada, when they were purchasing the Los Angeles temple. And the Los Angeles temple was a church, is that right, Gopalandesh? I believe it was formerly a church. And as you know, a church has various, you know, there's seats there for people to sit, and there was an organ over there. So when Prabhupada saw that, he told his disciples, leave that intact. don't dismantle the chairs, the seating arrangement, the seats which were there, and leave that organ over there. So Prabhupada's idea was to make people comfortable by getting them, they can sit there with their shoes on, and a temple would be in another room on the premises. So that was his idea, but for some whatever reason, they took out those chairs. And Prabhupada wasn't very happy with that arrangement. So yes, whether we do that here or not, you know, that is that's something has to be decided by the management. But as a principle, yes, people need to be made comfortable. As a principle, we need to see how we can make them more comfortable. And yes, for the mainstream population, they find it very difficult to sit on the floor. There is no arguing that point, right? People can't sit on the floor. This is the Indian culture. So, I agree with you on a principle level. And there are centers also here where, like, we have, you know, urban yoga, there's Radhe's, Mantra Lounge is there. These centers are there where people can come and feel comfortable. These centers are created in a way where people don't have to sit on the floor. There are seating arrangements, so people can feel comfortable. So that is also there. But good point, thank you.
Yeah. You're talking about the wars and how, you know, these Vedic things used to fight wars because other things are not Krishna conscious. And nowadays, mostly wars are for oil or something like that. What is your comment on the recent wars, sort of a situation which is happening in India right now, where some terrorists have killed on and people and then India struck that with the Indian airport? So, is that a war which is like a dharma war? Or?
Certainly not. It's all based on politics. So, yeah, this is all based on politics. I don't wish to delve into the specifics, but the point is, it is all, at the end of the day, it is politics, elections, and different agendas leaders have. Yes, the current leader in India is very favorable to ISKCON, And that is fantastic, you know. So as far as that goes, you know, we are supportive of the current leader, and we can work with the current leader. I'm sure ISKCON is working with the current leader, so they can propagate Krishna consciousness. And I heard Modi's speech. He gave a fantastic speech at the ISKCON Delhi temple, and he even gave his full support for ISKCON. So as far as we are concerned, you know, we can work with their. I'm sure ISKCON is working with them to propagate Krishna consciousness, but they're not so interested in the politics of all that. And whatever they're doing is they're doing, you know, it's outside our control.
But war against terrorism is right, isn't
it? War against terrorism? Yes, I mean, each country, they have to defend themselves. They have to defend their people. So, if they are taking it against the terrorists, yeah, it's good. They're protecting us, right? So we can see it in that way. So yeah, the leadership is protecting people, and devotees are also living there. So they're protecting devotees, and yeah, we support that. So as long as we support the safety of people as a principle. But we shouldn't get too, you know, engrossed, involved in the politics and all that. So, but the main point is Krishna is protecting us from... Krishna is protecting us through the leaders. Okay, any other point? No? Thank you very much. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.